Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if you're a regular listener to NPR, and if you're listening to Brian Lehrer Show on Monday morning, you probably are, then you're likely to recognize the voice of my next guest as the host of NPR's and WBEZ Chicago's news quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is celebrating its 20th year. But if you only know Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, you might not be aware that he's also a dedicated and accomplished runner, or as he self-identifies, a midlife crisis runner. By his own estimate, he's clocked about 25,000 miles over his whole life, 20,000 of them, including 14 marathons, since turning 40. In his new book, The Incomplete Book of Running, he shares stories of his most memorable runs and running partners and reflects on how running got him through a difficult point in his life. The book is at turns very funny, as you would expect from Peter Sagal, also very personal, covering everything from his encyclopedic knowledge of every public restroom in his Chicago adjacent neighborhood to his experience running in the 2013 Boston Marathon and crossing the finish line just minutes before the bomb went off. Hey, Peter, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, good to be back with you.
So I get the joke on the cover of the book.
It's a riff. Thank you.
It's a riff on the classic book, The Complete Book of Running by Jim Fix, with the red cover and his legs gracefully in motion. You have The Incomplete Book of Running with the red cover and your legs like out of balance with one of your shoes falling off.
Yes, one could say that it's unwise to pitch my jokes only to people over, say, the age of 45. But when you think about it, that's pretty much my entire career, isn't it?
Well, I would say not necessarily, judging on what I know from Wait, Wait as the most listened to show on public radio. But also Jim Fix,
yes,
as you and runners of that era know, was the running guru and healthy diet guru of his running generation. And then he died of a heart attack while running.
Yes, he did. I mean, for those who weren't around in the 70s, and I was a teenager then, it's when I started running. I don't know if we have anybody like Jim Fix in the culture. Every now and then we get these celebrity trainers who pop up and go away. But Jim Fix was this enormous cultural figure who wrote this, as I call it, the Quran of the whole 70s running boom. And everybody had his book. He became an overnight celebrity and a multimillionaire. He did one of those American Express ads, Do You Know Me? And then, you know, he told everybody they should go running. He told everybody that if you run, your life will improve, you'll lose weight, your health will improve, your mood will improve, your sex life will improve, everything will get better. Everybody started running, you know, their track suits all over the place. And then, as you say, he was out running one day and he died. He, as my Jewish relatives like to say, dropped dead. There were a lot of people back then who said, well, you see, I told you so. You shouldn't run. Of course, he had a cardiac flaw that he had never looked into.
Right.
But he was a hugely seminal guy in that running boom and in my life as well.
And I guess the reveal as it relates to you is that your dad had a copy of that book.
He did. And as I relate in the book, you know, my running career is very much something I inherited from my father. So this book is in some ways a tribute to him and his influence over me. He had that book and I remember reading it and as a pudgy, unathletic, nerdy – this will be a surprise, I'm sure, to all of our listeners – nerdy young kid and thinking, wow, if only I could do this, then maybe I too could be handsome and skinny and healthy and happy, all those things that I didn't particularly feel I was at the time. And in many ways, this book is an attempt to describe what happened when I actually tried to do that.
And in fact, you know, we were just talking in our previous segment about all the body image issues related to the Victoria's Secret runway show on television last night. You actually make a point.
Wait, I missed it? Damn it. Sorry.
Mark down your calendar for next year.
All right.
It is for men, after all. But you make a point about the unhealthy motivations for running, how that's tied to body image and things like that. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am, jokes aside, kind of against, in a philosophical way, not just Victoria's Secret. I'm sure they're a very fine company, but And not only them, but this whole sort of, I don't know what you want to call it, body image industrial complex. It's not just the Victoria's Secret's fashion show. It's the covers of all those magazines that you see arrayed at the airport, Fitness and Shape and all those other things, all those air, even Runner's World, which I've written for many years, that show you these airbrushed models and absolutely gorgeous with perfect tone and no hair where they don't want it. And they're making these promises, these magazines, these product ads, these infomercials for BodyFlex and the like, these fashion shows saying, if only you do X, if you buy this underwear, if you buy this machine, if you do this program, if you buy this book, you can look like that. And of course, you're never going to look like that. Mm. And one of the things I advocate for in the book and for running in particular is by going running, which is the least equipment, education, class dependent exercise there is. It's just running. You can get yourself away from all that, all those people who want to convince you that what you really need is a gym membership or a Peloton machine or whatever. You can just go out there and run. And if you do that, you're not going to become a cover model. You're not going to become an underwear model. You're going to become, I hope and I think, the best version of yourself that you can be.
Listeners, have a question for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me host Peter Sagal, whether you want to talk about running or anything else, now's your chance to be the one asking him the questions at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Peter Sagal's new book is called The Incomplete Book of Running.
Do you if they're difficult questions, I demand multiple choice and hints because it's only fair.
Then you get to bring on a whole panel of comedians to
exactly.
help you, right? Do you get what they call a runner's high?
You do, and that's nothing to be dismissed. I mean, there's a number of different kinds of runner's highs. There's like the classic one, which people relate to certain endorphins, this kind of almost flood of happy chemicals in your brain that does in fact give you elation, and I've experienced that many times. But there are other mental benefits. I think these days simply going outside is a benefit. We do that infrequently enough to get outside, simply moving, simply, you know, getting out of the Ubers and the subways and the pedways and the God knows what else we use to get around, the electric scooters, which I enjoyed recently in Portland. Mm. Simply moving your body outside is in and of itself a mental benefit. And I've gotten into a little bit, I won't say trouble, but caused a little bit of controversy, especially given the business that you and I are in. But I genuinely believe that people should go run and leave their headphones behind because I think that we just don't give ourselves enough time to listen to our own thoughts. We demand distraction at all moments. And I think doing that, even though you're feeling a little scared because, oh my gosh, what are you going to do without something to listen to? Mm-hmm. Eventually, I think letting your own thoughts air out is a good thing for everybody.
A blurb on your book jacket is from PJ O'Rourke, who calls
yes.
the book A Manifesto to the Redemption of Escape. Is that a thing, the redemption of escape?
Yeah, I do. I think that a lot of us feel trapped by our circumstances, by our whatever they may be, professional, domestic. Sometimes those are things that we can't solve easily. But I honestly believe that simply escaping the bubble, the prisons that we build up around ourselves, if only for half an hour to go for a run, if only if you're a New Yorker to take a half hour and jog around the Reservoir or Prospect Park, two of my favorite places to run in this whole world, by the way, or on the West Side Path.
Mm-hmm.
To get out of it just for a second makes it a little easier to slip back into harness, as Robert Frost might put it. And I think that we are so – the way that we live these days is about strapping ourselves down onto input, into jobs, into other responsibilities. And I'm all for just running away, if only for a short period of time.
Do you want to talk about your story with respect to you being what you call a midlife crisis runner?
Yeah, I was somebody who, again, I think I'm presuming a lot of people might relate to this. I found myself approaching 40, and like a lot of people who do that, I hadn't thought it was possible. I mean, really? You can turn 40? Even me? I thought that was for old people. And I had the kind of typical response. It was a fear of mortality. Yes, oh my God, if I'm turning 40, then I'm going to die. Oh my God. But it also was, and I think this is more common for men and for women, everybody, to say, oh my gosh, I'm approaching 40. Is this what my life is? To quote some wise philosopher, is that all there is? And I decided to try this running thing more seriously than I had for a long time. And it became, I won't say an obsession, I'll say a passion to excel at this. I'd never expected it of myself. Anybody who's ever met me knows that I do not look or seem like a gifted athlete and never had been. But I managed, I think, to achieve some fairly decent results for a person of my age and limitations. And it's almost as if I was looking at what would be someday far in the future my obituary, and I wanted there to be something else on it other than he told fart jokes on public radio, as honorable a profession as that is.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break and then continue with the inveterate fart joke teller on public radio, who is now also the author of the incomplete book of running, Peter Sagal. And we have a full board of callers who want to talk to you about one or the other. And I'm also going to play my favorite 45 seconds from this week's Wait, Wait. So we'll have that reveal when we come back after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me host Peter Sagal. He's got a new book called The Incomplete Book of Running. And Beth, on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Brian. You know, I said to your screener, I can't believe that I'm talking to the two of you because I'm a huge fan of yours, Brian. I call in all the time. I'm a huge fan of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And Peter, I will be in the audience this Thursday at Carnegie Hall.
Oh, that's exciting.
But running is such a big deal, or it has been a big deal in my life. I'm in my early 60s, and I did it avidly for 20 years and had to stop because it really did take a toll. But I always say if someone could guarantee that I could get back to running, I'd have both my knees replaced. It just played such a huge role in my life. And I just thought it was so interesting that before you even mentioned it, that it followed the conversation about the whole Victoria's Secret, because I think like many women growing up in this culture, you know, it's not uncommon to struggle with your idea of body image. And it was the first time running, really, like I would run for hours and I would just be so impressed with that my legs could carry me that far. And like it just made such a difference on so many levels. I'm fanatic about it. I'm of the age that I do remember James Fix, was it?
Yeah, Fix, F-I-X-X. Yeah. Peter, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say that actually what you've said is really important. And one of the things that running can do for people is, as it seems to have done for you, is it can take your mind, your obsession, your focus away from what my body is supposed to look like. And again, that's a death trap. You're never going to get to where culture tells you you should be. And you can instead start enjoying and appreciating and even taking pride in what your body can do. I mean, you'll never be able again. None of us, except for the tiny fortunate few, to look like an underwear model. However, you and I and most people listening can train up to run 10 miles without stopping. And you know what? Those underwear models, I bet they can't do that. And there's such a pleasure to be taken in achievement and the power and the strength and the resilience that comes that we can all get to that I think overwhelms any sort of, you know, Victoria's Secret caused body dysmorphia. So that's another reason. And I agree and appreciate with what you just said. I think that's something that's accessible to everybody.
Beth, thank you very much. So guess what? Our next caller is at this very moment running, I am told. Dan, could you put up, Matt, could you put up line 8? I can't seem to do it. Dan in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
All right. Hi, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You were actually running. Where are you running right now?
So I'm very close to the Brooklyn side of the Manhattan Bridge.
Okay.
I'm doing my 4 times a week 8-miler, which I always time to listen to Brian's show. So
that's
great.
Wow.
My question is a running question, which is that I've been running a long time. I run a lot. Why does it never get easier? You know, physically, why does it always feel so difficult?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. It's subjective. In my experience, it does get easier, but at the same time, I was always upping my goals, right? So, I mean, right now I could easily run 3 miles without many effort. That was hard for me one day. There have been times when I was able to run out and run 10 miles without breaking a sweat almost, not literally. So for one thing, it is effort, you know, I think also you're running 8 miles 4 days a week. That's tough. And you are asking for and getting a challenge. And the only thing I can tell you is that if you want it to feel easier, test yourself less. But my guess is that if you're out there doing it 4 days a week, and I admit the pleasure of being able to listen to Brian uninterrupted is excessive. But if you're doing that, then, you know, you're kind of looking for the test. My guess is that for you, that's part of the appeal.
Dan, when the guests really infuriate you, do you run faster?
I take me totally out of the running problem. Like, I forget that I'm running.
That's so great.
That answers it. That actually, that makes a good point to me, which is that if I'm distracted, it becomes easier.
Yeah, I think actually one of the reasons, frankly, that I tell people, and I apologize to you, Brian, and to you, the caller, that I advise people to not run with headphones, even though, of course, listening to Brian's show is an excellent thing to do, is because I think that in that attempt to distract ourselves, which I do too, I'm not going to claim to be holier than thou, we miss the point. I think that my best runs, and I can say this without doubt, have been ones when I have had nothing in my ears but my own thoughts and able to focus rather than distract myself and begin to sort of get over the various humps that I think are more mental than physical,
Dan,
that we have to get over.
Dan, keep your eyes on the road out there.
Thank you. I believe me, I do.
Thank you guys. Thanks for running while listening. It's funny, funny, Peter. I run a little bit. I mean, nothing like you do, but I run a little bit, you know, just for fitness. And I actually sometimes have the opposite experience, I think, which is that if I don't run, I usually listen to music. If I run listening to music, I get more out of myself.
Yeah.
Whereas if I run listening to nothing, then my mind is still churning over about, you know, my work, my kids, all this stuff.
You know, it's a little bit – and first of all, again, so many people feel just the same way you do, and millions of people run with music. Sometimes these, you know, these various companies are coming up with like even playlists that are, you know, synchronized to your pace. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that the value of running, some of it lies in its meditative aspect. And as I think it was Deepak Chopra who said, if you don't have time to meditate once per day, meditate twice per day. And I honestly think that the challenge, if you will, of spending time in your own head is worth the difficulty of getting there. And so that's been my experience. Like, I think about running around Central Park, which is, again, I said I love to do. And I don't remember, when I think about my many runs in the 6 mile loop, I don't remember what I was listening to, but I do remember moments of interactions with other people or things I saw or even thoughts I had. And I think I don't always get there, but when I do, it's a better experience for me.
That's a wonderful, high-minded way to go. Seriously. All right, I'm gonna replay my favorite 45 seconds from this weekend.
I've been trying to guess what it was, Brian, so I'm excited to find out.
I'll just say that you and the panel were talking about CRISPR and the Chinese scientists, or doctor, I guess, who has DNA edited a few fetuses in the womb, and here we go.
Now, if he did this, it would be the first time anybody's admitted to actually changing a human's DNA on purpose, which would be shocking, but also disappointing, because if you're going to do it, do it. I mean, give the baby girls a pair of wings or like laser eyes, retractable claws. I mean, however healthy these kids might end up, they're going to be the most boring X-Men ever.
How about a baby that doesn't poop?
That would be great, but I'm just imagining the baby's growing sense of dismay.
Yeah. That poor baby.
Yeah,
can you imagine its face would just be like the human embodiment of gas.
I know.
Just swelling gently.
It would be terrible.
Individual number one.
Who was that? That was so clever to get individual number one.
That was
in there.
Tom Papa, who many people might know as the head writer and Out in America correspondent from Live from Here on the weekends. A brilliant and very funny comedian. And if you had listened to the whole show, he had been talking earlier. We had been talking, of course, about the whole Michael Cohen indictment and the reference to individual one, a candidate. Yes. For president in 2016, who runs a business out of a building on Fifth Avenue. And Tom's joke had been that Donald Trump is probably proud to be referred to as individual number one. I'm number one. So his invocation of that at that moment was, as we say in the comedy business, choice.
which relates to these 20 seconds of the true-false round.
True or false, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo hired an aide who got the job despite saying that President Trump has made some, quote, rookie errors.
True.
No, false. She said Trump is, quote, delusional on foreign policy and demonstrates frightening ignorance.
It's always worse. It's just always worse.
So do you rehearse, you know, do you tell the panelists, like, okay, we're going to talk about the Chinese DNA editing, and so they can prepare lines?
Not usually. These days, our rule has always been don't notify the panelists what we're going to ask them about. And that is because our show really thrives, as I think you just demonstrated, on improvisation. That line from Tom, you know, individual number one, right at the end, which I thought was great, funny, was a great callback, but nothing we had planned. These days, I should say, there's so much Trump news, because in any given week, there might be four things that we might want to talk about in the context of like 4 minutes. So sometimes we alert the panels, okay, we're going to focus the top of the show on this particular atrocity and not that one. We're going to save that other atrocity for the next question. So don't bring up atrocity B when we're talking about atrocity A. Other than that, though, we very much like our panelists to be completely unprepared, because I think that when you get right down to it, the thing that makes us stand out, wait, from the huge, you know, satirical industrial complex that dominates the airwaves, is that we are mostly and genuinely improvisational.
Susan in Edgemont, you're on WNYC with Peter Sagal. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm a big fan of both of yours. I have a question. I understand, Peter, that you have run marathons with disabled or blind people.
Yes, blind people.
And I wonder how that came about, and are you still doing that?
I have done it. The most recent time was just last year, the 2017 New York Marathon, where I ran with the Achilles team. The story is told in my book, The Incomplete Book of Running, but the short version is that in 2013, my marriage was breaking up rather rapidly and disastrously, and I needed to get out of the house. And I happened to get an invitation from a young man who's now a good friend, but I didn't know. He ran a team that guided runners at the Boston Marathon for the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. He said, would you like to do it? I was a fairly well-known marathoner. And he invited me to do it. And I ended up for the first time, the first of now four times, running as a guide for a blind runner, which was an extraordinarily gratifying and fulfilling experience for me. I hope for the person I guided that day, William Greer. And then, as it just so happens, after a difficult but I think challenging and fulfilling race, we crossed the line 4 minutes before the bombs went off. So it ended up being a very memorable day.
Susan, thank you for your call. And I think that's, you know, that's very you. I mean, your sense of humanity is very much on display in this book. And I even thought it was on display in that little clip we played of the CRISPR segment, because while the other people on the panel were talking about how great it would be for the parents if the babies didn't have to poop, you took it from the baby's perspective.
Well, yes. I mean, you're so great if a baby doesn't poop. Yeah, great for you. What about the poor baby? I mean, you know, I have to say, looking back on my life, some of my happiest times have been spent pooping. So why would I deny that to any child?
Too much information.
It is on brand, though, for me, Brian. You realize this.
So did I hear you're doing Wait, Don't Tell Me from New York?
Not only New York. We're doing it from Carnegie Hall. We're doing two shows Thursday and Friday. I think it's our first return to Carnegie Hall in about a decade. We did a couple of shows there way back when. And it's very exciting. I'm sad, albeit proud to say, we are entirely sold out. Mm. In fact, I wasn't even able to get tickets for a whole number of good friends in the city. So I'm sorry, Jack and Kurt and Mark. But it should be pretty raucous, and we are I have to tell you, sometimes I look around my life and I can't believe how surreal it is. And one of those moments is when I step out on the stage at a place like Carnegie Hall, I, who have no musical talent whatsoever, who was thrown out of my high school chorus at Governor Livingston High School in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey, because I couldn't stay in tune. And yet now, take that, Mr. Phillips, chorus teacher. Here I am at Carnegie Hall.
Very much in tune every weekend on WNYC and on public radio stations around the country. Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and now the author of the incomplete book of running. What a pleasure to have you on the show again, Peter. Thank you
so much.
Ryan,
it's always so much fun to talk to you. Thank you so much.